Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hello. Welcome once more to Reckless Attack, a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast. I am, as always, your GM, Nathan, and I said, I think all of that in one breath, including this, and now I'm struggling.
Yeah, oh no.
Hello. Thank you once again, dear listeners, for joining us, joining myself, as well as, of course, joining the excellent players I am surrounded around this table by, starting with the individual on my right.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve, and I am playing Zulf Asterlin, the Dragonborn monk who is excited to get going for the next book that we have to go collect so that we can get the heck out of the restricted section of the library.
You're not having a nice time?
It's not that I'm not having a nice time. It's just that this seems to be kind of a dangerous place, and I'm beginning to understand why it's been restricted.
Yep. Yeah, fair. Okay.
And to my right.
Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I play Kaskrin Brightmane, the Dwarven Warlock, who is really enjoying this short rest that we're currently in.
Boy. Very appreciative
of
it.
Yeah, and someone who gets a lot of stuff back on a short rest. It's pretty okay, actually. Pretty neat. And to my right.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior. And Checkers is strongly considering whether or not to ever touch a book again in his life.
Oh, the darkest of outcomes.
Yep.
His rejection, anti-intellectualism.
Yeah, right. May never step foot into the library again. I think he's just done with reading and writing in general.
You know? But his writing was going so well.
I know. But things have really taken a turn for the worse here in the restricted section, and he's just contemplating that. And to my right.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie, and I will be playing Valeska Carter, the human Astric cleric of the Arcana Domain. And Val has spent this short rest throwing crumpled up pieces of paper at her friends to make sure they know that she loves them and would never betray them, and plans to leave her new book in a barrel because, man, does she not want to upset her friends further.
But it is a cool book, though.
It is.
Have you considered it's a really cool book?
Yeah. It is a really cool book, but Val likes her friends a lot. Uncharacteristically for her, she's probably realizing some things. She likes her friends more than books.
Whoa. Well, let's not. Okay. I feel like maybe that's coming from an activated place, you know, like you're in a crisis situation. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure if you really, you know, once you move past and through it, you'll really be able to reflect and really make sure that you mean that, because that's.
I feel like that's the Libra Morte talking.
Yeah. What? No. No.
No, I'm waiting for the, hey, Val, you know, I could help you get that book just from the Libra Morte in the back of your mind.
Just getting another book.
Yeah.
That's right, everyone. We are still in the restricted section of the Agmar Library, and things are complicated at the moment. The party has successfully gotten two of the 5 books that they were sent on, the 2 vital, important books that had to be done for Lorana Moonglove to help you guys out. But most recently, you got the Libra Morte, who was really pretty interested in finding someone cool and powerful and just like a cool, like a neat, smart, cool person to hang out with. And what it got was Val. the party has been concerned about Val attuning to a book whose motives and mechanical alignment are unclear. But over the course, as David said, of the kind of the short rest, everyone has kind of gone off to their various corners of the empty void of Titanius. Maybe there's a little bit of chatter. Titanius kind of breaking in here and there, checking in, but I'm kind of imagining that it's been about an hour. All of you are feeling a little bit better in terms of your physical and arcane needs. Maybe you are feeling better interpersonally. Maybe you're not. Maybe you are waiting to see if everyone else feels okay before you decide how okay you feel. Each of you, kind of unconsciously, maybe, start to break out of whatever trance, period of reflection, period of mad scribblings in journals, realizing, okay, it's been about an hour. We should probably get moving. And each of you kind of independently, you're in your adventurer sense breaks you out of that. But what does the omniscient eye of the audience see in each of your characters? Where are you sitting? What's kind of your body language? And what's your overall just kind of vibe? I'm imagining the camera kind of swooping into this empty white void. Titanius is, you can see him already kind of flicking through his weird little magical Rolodex, searching for what he knows your next probably target or targets are going to be. And the four of you are seated or leaning or reclined or whatever.
I think Casquin has actually been feeling a lot better as the hour has worn on. And I think that is in part because I'm imagining both Valeska and Casquin have these piles of crumpled paper next to them as they've just been like throwing messages back and forth. Like, Casquin got the first message of, like, here's why I'm a good human being still. And Casquin is, like, kind of throwing the messages back with, like, his own little scribbles on it. Over the hour, you know, there's been, like, some chuckles. And really, for Casquin reaffirming, he chose to trust Val back in the Liber Mortis room. And even before that, you know, he chose to trust Val during the fight with the shepherd and everything that happened during that. And even though there is a small amount of doubt, he's choosing to trust Val still. And so he's just like, you know, kind of got like his one final message that he's written or that he's received from Val, and then folds it up, puts it in his pocket, and then kind of gets up from the short rest.
So Selv is sitting cross-legged and is just kind of meditating and relaxing and going over in his mind just a bit of the conversation that Checkers and Selv had of how to determine if anything has actually happened to Val because she took possession of the Libra Morte. Selv absolutely believes what he told Checkers, that if it's still the same Val acting the same way and doing the same things, then at least for the time being, the book has no control, no sway over her. But that doesn't mean to not keep an eye out. Selv is kind of trying to center himself and remain calm and take in whatever this next action is going to be for whatever book or books we're going after next.
So the camera zooms in on Checkers and Mango, and Checkers is just sitting there absent-mindedly giving Mango belly rubs. But Checkers is sitting there thinking, looking between the barrel of water with the Liber Morte and towards Valeska, and really the words that Selv has said are just echoing in his mind. If Val is still the person that Checkers knows that she is, then everything's fine. So he's trying to balance that with this fear that Val has somehow gone somewhere and that the book has taken over. But for right now, he's willing to let things just sit. And he's looking at Titania's kind of flip through this Rolodex, eager to see what comes out of it.
At the end of the short rest, you'll see Val collecting all the crumpled bits of paper, folding maybe one more piece of parchment to zoom over at Checker's direction, as I assume there's just piles of them littered all over the ground. And she finishes kind of writing like a debrief in her notebook of what's happened and the time between writing notes to her friends. She apologized to Selv as she definitely interrupted his calming, centering meditation with a weirdly well-placed fervale throw to the head. She wasn't aiming for his head, but that's...
Couldn't replicate it in a million years, in a million throws.
She'll kind of tidy everything up, make sure everything's back in place. She'll look to the water barrel, but will make no move to retrieve the Libra Morte, valuing the tense peace that the group has come to in this hour, and will slowly walk over to Titanius and wait for the group to join her.
As you guys come back together and gather around Titanius's desk, he tries very hard to just kind of notice you. Oh, you guys are all together, ready to go. All feeling rested, feeling better? He asks pointedly.
I think the short rest was exactly what we needed, but I do want to do a time check.
Yes. So I was doing a couple things. It was pretty quiet in here. So right now, you guys had kind of a loose estimate of, I think, like 4 or 5-ish hours.
Yeah, if we can get all this wrapped up in 4 hours, I think that will be ideal.
Well, I have good news and news to be interpreted. I'll start with the news to be interpreted. Right now, after resting, going through those first ones, you've been in here, and he's kind of just finding a loose piece of notes that he has scrawled on some things on. You've been here for about 2.5, maybe 2.75 hours or so, somewhere in there. So still some amount of time, but...
Yeah. Okay, so we have about 1.5 left.
Minimum.
Yeah, of course.
To get the other books, to figure out a way to get me out, preferably, would be good. But I have good news. I was looking through the catalog here, and I realized that two of the books are in the same room. So I think, I can just pull both cards, give them to you guys, and we should be able to open one doorway and get both, hopefully, quickly.
Sounds like a plan.
2-for-1 deal. Nice.
I realize now I said quickly, and I'm very worried I've jinxed you.
What could possibly go wrong?
So I'm going to pretend I didn't say that. While you are gone, I will be trying to figure out ways to undo curses, I guess. He fires up his kind of magical Rolodex. You see it spinning once more. And he grabs two cards as it is spinning. Just grabs one, grabs two, and holds them out one after the other to you guys. And you see two of the books on your list, specifically Planespotting and Arcane Anthony's Amazing Atlas and Almanac. And he extends his hand out to you guys for someone or a pair of someones to be, as you well know, the official caretakers of each of these. And he kind of looks at you all as he extends his hand and says, well, like we said last time, the library takes who is checking out books pretty seriously. I don't know all of what would happen if you do it again. And maybe you won't have a choice, but I would encourage you to choose as wisely as you can, especially knowing that we already have at least one curse that has been placed in the last 30 seconds.
Feld, chuckles under her breath about how worried Titanius is, because, 1% of her believes that there is a curse.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Some nervous energy bubbling up.
Yeah, he is not a calming presence in this moment. He's... No. Pretty worried.
Val does kind of put her hands behind her back because she's trying to read the vibe of the group of like, who is going to take these? Is Val welcome to take any more books? She always wants more books, but that got into trouble before.
Kaskrin is definitely going to walk up and take one. And there is a little bit of like a quick glance at Valeska. You know, it might be unconscious, but he, you know, walks up and takes one of these cards before like you can kind of reach and do that yourself.
Is Val still standing with her hands behind her back?
Yeah, Val's not going to make a move because she thinks if she goes to grab one of the books that it would... It feels like a bad move.
It'd be
for
interpreted
her to do,
as an aggressive move.
Is Valeska the imposter?
Yeah. Yeah, but like pretty sus. But no, I mean, I think that's very descriptive of Val's being like, I'm just being over cautious, basically. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to do anything that can possibly be misinterpreted because of how worried I guess she is, maybe, or mm-hmm. I don't know, whatever it is.
Yeah, again, she's trying to like, we got to an uneasy understanding over the short rest. So her whole mood and her motives are now, how do I keep that uneasy piece? And how can I keep showing to the group that I'm not different? And then like, she starts mentally spiraling a little bit of like, well, I would grab the book if it was normally me. But then like, I don't know if Checkers would probably feel bad about that. And like, her eyes start to glow at just the insane back and forth that is happening in her own mind as anxiety just starts rising in her.
Selv has a pretty decent insight. So once he sees...
For noticing glowing eyes.
The glowing eyes,
You probably see her like break a sweat too. Yeah.
So Selv will place his hand on Valeska's shoulder and just kind of pat her shoulder and then take the other card.
As both of you kind of grab these cards in your own time, you see both of them kind of activate in the way that you've seen them activate before. Maybe in this one, actually, you see on both, they have matching kind of filigree and decorations around the borders. It looks kind of like a cart...
Cartographer?
Well, I was going to say cartographic image, but that felt a little pretentious. It looks kind of like a map. but is very stylized, and it appears on the outside as if there's even the illusion of burnt edges, kind of like it's an old treasure map. And
oh, cool.
You see all kinds of additional details, like a globe spinning and stacks of books and scrolls and all kinds of, you know, kind of map-making feeling details. You see a single doorway with two interactive points, I guess, kind of light up. They're not doorknobs. They're not really holes. They're just kind of additional glowing areas kind of appear in the space behind you guys.
I do have to wonder, is there anything that we know about these two books that are the same, such that they would be filed away in the same room? Like, we had the historical records for the Pentarchy proclamations. Like, what about these books is similar enough that they would be in the same place?
They are both travel books. They are both means or ways in which you could find your way or actively transport yourself.
Very cool. True. And actually, another thing that you would know that I would, again, also say is a kind of given, because these are rare books, but not secretive books like the Liber Morte would have been. They're also quite old. Mm-hmm. These are not recent anythings. I mean, of course, they couldn't be too recent being that they're in the restricted section, mm-hmm. but they predate Ultra Giants. Some editions date back centuries.
The Farmer's Almanac from like 1850.
Essentially, yeah.
I would wonder though too if the Atlas did have different planes as part of it and not just the material plane kind of atlas.
So the interesting bit about Arcane Anthony's Amazing Atlas and Almanac is that they were created in a high magic time and were enchanted so that to a degree of accuracy and detail, they self-updated.
Oh.
Now, whether they are updated now with being kind of squirreled away in the restricted section, let alone in Agmar, let alone just over hundreds and hundreds of years, it's hard to say. But that is kind of the magical, the oomph that makes arcane, that distinguishes an Arcane Anthony product from the other dumb atlases and or almanacs.
I also feel like Arcane Anthony's Amazing Atlas and Almanac is like the, I can't remember the title of the book right now, but it's like, who was the travel author that like every American tourist bought their book to travel to the countries of Europe?
Rick Steves.
Thank you. Yeah. Was just like, this is Rixia's Rick Steves.
Arcane Anthony definitely had a series of adjacent books. You could have specific restaurant guides to cities that kept up to date of closures, of if they were participating in paid fees, of course, that could update menus for you. It was called Arcane Anthony's Grubhub. Yep, that's was the name, the fantasy name.
So Nathan,
what are you doing?
If I heard you correctly.
What are you doing?
If I heard you correctly, Arcane Anthony's Amazing Atlas and Almanac comes with automatic addendums and additions.
God damn it. Yes. Yes. All right. The door creaks open. You guys got to go through right now.
I do want to imagine, like, Cascarin and Selv are, like, you know, approaching the kind of, like, two slots that are hanging out in midair. We insert the cards, turn them, and I'm imagining instead of, like, a doorway opening, there's just kind of, like, a vague shimmer that appears in the air between them. And there's, like, kind of a clear outline, but there's no doorway that opens. Like, it's not obvious what happens. Until, yes. I'm imagining like Selv kind of reaches his hand in there and like almost pushes like something like a curtain away a little bit, and it kind of like looks into darkness, and then like pushes all the way through as he steps through the curtain into the next room.
David, first, I love that description. It is perfect. Second, I like that you said that Steve's character was the one.
Absolutely. I'm taking away player agency here.
And be like, let's have Selv go through.
You just got evasion, right? You're first.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. He's high initiative, probably some good stealth. It'll be fine.
Yeah, he got like plus one armor. He's going to be all good.
So allow me to continue to take away player agency for just one more moment.
Nice. That's how you play D&D, baby.
Yeah, Cascarin gives Selv a hearty slap on the shoulder, and Cascarin...
And backflips through the doorway, and it's like, it's all good.
Yeah, exactly. But Selv, you somehow feel compelled, like just maybe through Cascarin's sheer amount of leadership, and knowing that Cascarin has your back, go through... And what I need from you right now, Steve, is to please, for myself and the table and our listening audience, reenact what Selv sounds like when he is, we'll say, suddenly careening down a crevice, but in a way as if, how do I say it?
As if
Featherfall wouldn't help you.
Okay.
Something sudden happened, and
imagine you're level one.
Not necessarily falling, but like taken away in a
So like the floor fell out and I'm sliding down something.
Right,
or
exactly.
Like, or full on falling.
We'll say that you're sliding down something.
Okay.
Because what you all see happen is that Selv, courageously spurred on, knowing that his party has his back, goes to step through the portal. And he puts a foot into the blackness. And you see that his foot just keeps going, if there is no floor. And he just kind of tumbles forward in a way that is unusual for someone of his dexterity and grace, as he is just suddenly gone from all of your sight. As you hear,
here we go. There's a hole.
Very matter of fact. That's why you send Selv first, because he will give you actionable information. But you hear this, and he's gone. You hear nothing.
Cascarin goes in next and like parts the curtain takes a step, and you guys just hear, oh, he's right!
Val will quickly follow and push back the curtain, but also then, like, sit down on her butt and then, like, kind of scoot forward and, like, okay.
Just kind of like she's like kind of baby sky, like
almost like cannonballing.
Yeah,
but, like,
right.
Fetal
just rolling
position.
Over, basically. Yes.
Checkers is that kid that does what you're not supposed to do at the water park, where he just like dives headfirst into the water slide and just with his arms out, just wee right through the curtains.
And you cut to Titania sitting at his desk looking at Mango, just shrugs, and the frog hops in after.
Yeah.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by A Foul Light Shines, a new free serial novel based on a D&D campaign. The Empire of Fire and Water has known 20 golden years of peace since the end of Aegenion's War, a peace which is now in peril. When a ragtag group of friends intervene in a grotesque monster attack, they're too late to save a wounded man who leaves them with an encrypted journal and the words, "Trust no one, Tyr." Can the gang find Tyr, escape the claws of more strange monsters, and uncover the lurking threat to the Empire before it's too late? This story features themes of found family and strength in diversity, and is available for free on Campfire and Royal Road. A Foul Light Shines. Come for the fantasy. Stay for the cheese-obsessed goblin gunslinger.
Hi, it's me, Sophie. Do you want more Reckless Attack? Then join our Discord and chat with us in our community. The link for the Discord is in the show notes, or head on over to our website, recklessattack.com. We also have a Patreon. You can listen to our new show, Reckless Snack, and other content if you become a patron. We really appreciate your support, and thank you for listening to the episode.
You all are falling through space and perhaps time. All sense of up and down is not lost to you, but instead is constantly shifting in different directions. Your senses take what could be a few moments, what could be a few minutes, to understand what is happening to you, because there is such a buffering of different colors, temperatures, sensations, and scenery flying past you as you are just windmilling your arms, falling backwards in a direction that you can't possibly try to orient yourselves. Flashes of color hit, flashes of temperature hit, and it takes a while for you to kind of get your collective bearings enough to realize that you're not just kind of being pelted with random feelings. Instead, you are being cut through dioramas of different locations. Jungle, desert. You are flying over what appear to be a giant mountain range with a glacier just flying through the sky. Suddenly you are underwater, soaking wet, surrounded by horrifying underwater creatures that your brain alone cannot comprehend, let alone in this context. You catch snapshots of castles, of ruins, of people dancing around a fire, all the while being spun upside down, being pulled in all kinds of different directions by gravity and sensation, until smack, 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 smack. All five of you, one after the other, find yourselves standing still in what appears to be, we'll say, the opposite of the room you were just in, where instead of a white void filled with essentially nothing, you are in a black void filled with essentially nothing. It is not dark per se. You can make each other out totally fine. And it is as if you are animated characters on a black background.
Val leans over, puts her hands on her knees, just like, don't throw up, don't throw up, don't throw up. It's okay. Pulls out like a ginger chew and starts eating.
That was disorienting.
Would you like a ginger chew?
That would be fantastic.
Guys, that was great. We should do it again.
Give me like 10 minutes.
Mango vomits.
Casquin is comforting Mango.
Wait. Hold on. Mortals are here. No, I know. I know.
Casquin is going to call out into this black void. Hello? Can you hear us?
Holy shit. Okay. Everyone, places. No, this is not a dress rehearsal. Okay. Everyone, again, have it queued up. Have it ready. Are we good? Okay. No! In a world so vast that it could never be explored in 100 lifetimes, one show will explore it all through the power of books. And then just, it is as if a light switch to existence is flipped on. You are suddenly in a giant arena.
What?
A huge cry is let up as all around you, you see stands filled with probably people that are various, you know, kind of mortal sizes that let up just this big cheer. You find yourselves all standing together. Again, you have not moved as far as you could physically tell, but you are standing on a platform that is in the middle of a huge arena. Again, to put it in our human terms, this is several football fields. And as you're taking in all this information, you see that in the middle of this giant field, you can maybe see in the distance there are a couple other, maybe like groups situated scores of yards away from you. And in the middle is this kind of high-walled dome, where you have a path leading from wherever you're standing straight into it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Great Library Games! Wait, hold on. That's what we're going with? No, it's fine. No, we'll edit it later. No, yeah, let's go. All right, take it back. That's right. Welcome to the Great Library Games, the show where we explore every corner of Rixia using adventure and acumen. I am your host. And then suddenly, appearing above the giant dome, you see a floating head spinning around in a circle, like it's just a giant, several story high hologram.
Does this head look familiar?
Does it look like Sir Flintano?
I love that idea. Yes, it looks familiar. No, it's not Sir Flintano. But you're not 100% sure. You don't know where it is. Like, who is that person? They look familiar, and I'm not 100% sure. That's right. It's me, your host, the library, almanistic retrieval entity, a.k.a. your host with the most, Larry Steves, and the crowd just like an animalistic yell excitedly.
Oh, no.
I would like Sophie, I guess is the one rolling the dice, but I would like Val and Kaskarin, actually. I think you two would both have the most likely exposure to this information, and since you both asked it, roll me a d20.
Kaskarin with a natural 20.
Nice. Oh. Val with a 5.
You know exactly who this is, Kaskarin.
Hell yeah.
Because who this face is, I guess, but it can't be. This is Larry Steves, a name that you haven't heard before. But You have seen that face somewhere. No, you've seen that face like a lot of places. And you're trying to think about it as you're taking all this information in. You can't take your eyes away from this. Well, for a lot of reasons, you can't take away your eyes from this giant floating head screaming things. And then it clicks. You have seen this face on dozens of books in your local library. Specifically, maybe when you were researching maybe Agmar, maybe learning more about some of the other places they might be visiting. This is definitely the face of Trip Steves, acclaimed travel writer who is very famous for his kind of city by city breakdowns, tells people all the cool places to go, all that kind of stuff, and is definitely separate from Rick Steves, who we mentioned earlier in the episode. But this is Larry Steves. Do you react to that? It's reasonable if you don't.
Ooh,
I guess what's your personal connection?
Yeah, I feel like Casper doesn't know who he is.
Well, again, you could just know, like, you'd be like, I know that face. It's the travel guy.
Yeah, I've seen that face. Ooh, that's a good question, actually.
It's good. Especially, again, maybe you don't have a connection to it. You're just like, it's that. It'd be the same as being like, I don't know, it's the fucking...
I can't decide if, like, Catherine either doesn't know him or, like, it's way into Trip Steves. And it's
right.
Like,
yeah. It could just be, I don't know, it's like that fucking Bobby Flay guy. I don't know, he, like, barbecues and is like, I don't know, he's a food guy, whatever. Or it could be like, oh, no, I always read Trip Steves wherever I go and sometimes when it's just for fun.
If it's possible, maybe because Lotros is such an old city... There was a Trip Steves Lotros book that was still handed out by the city guard for, like, people who came in. And so Casper was just responsible, like, for handing out a book with this man's face on it.
Yeah,
like, not a picture of Lotros, but just a picture of Trip Steves.
I'm going to say, I'll go even further. We are accidentally, through David's player choices and dice rolls, creating Lotros as a strange hub of literature. Because not only is Trip Steves, again, you can decide on the handed out bit, Trip Steves is from Lotros. Or, like, maybe he spent some time there or whatever. You know, he's a worldly person. Mm-hmm, he doesn't stay in one place for too long. Mm-hmm. And by he, I mean him and his subsequent 40 generations of Trip Steves writers.
I'm going to say that to Kaskarin, Trip Steves is a celebrity. Like, he had some of his, you know, all of his, like, travel books because, like, God, what an incredible human to, like, have traveled to all these different locations that, like, Kaskarin's never been to and, like, disperse that information to the public. Like, look at these mountains. Look at these oceans. Like, these incredible locales.
Yeah. 100%.
And just sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say that Trip Steves books have been out for a while. Maybe they don't even aren't made fresh anymore. Maybe they are. I don't know. But they were definitely big, like... 60, 80, 100 years ago. Then again, maybe continued, but that was when they were really kind of in their heyday. Mm-hmm. You know, before the Ultra Giants came and messed everything up.
Like, I feel that because travel is so hard in our time right now, the thought of somebody going to all these places, like across Rixia, is just so foreign to Cass. And then Cass having experienced travel, it's even worse now.
Right.
He's like, how did this man do this?
Well, like, I imagine, too, these books became, like...
Well, as soon as the Ultra Giants came and everything kind of... Things got destroyed and people couldn't travel as much, those books might have become more popular.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that was, you know...
The connection to the outside world.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, look at, like, this piece of, like, nostalgia, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just, like, what the world used to be. So yeah, I'm going to say, like, Kaskarin handed out these books with joy, and, just sharing the knowledge and the wisdom of Trip Steves.
Do you have a visible or audible reaction to realizing, holy shit.
Oh yeah, there is a... And Kaskarin is immediately, like, way into this. Like, he, as soon as Trip Steves is like, I'm sorry, as soon as Larry Steves
is
introducing the show, Kaskarin is, like, one hand, like, waving to the crowd.
Like pageant waving?
Yeah, pageant, like, enthusiastically just like, hey, we're here. We did it. We made it.
I always imagine Selv is more of a lonely Rixia guy.
Yeah. The voiceover continues, certainly without paying particular attention to Kaskarin, suddenly become very enthusiastic about what's going on around him. That's right, everyone. For the next 23 minutes, not including commercial breaks, we will be joined, as we are every week, by a number of impressive teams from across Rixia who will be competing against one another and maybe themselves to earn fabulous prizes and entertain our very real studio audience. Ah, more screams, more screams. Let's get to know our contestants. Now, as you all know, watching from home, no mortal being has been inside of this room for, well, longer than I've had consciousness, but for the first time, our loyal and enthusiastic viewers will get to enjoy our first team of mortals. And as soon as the word mortals is uttered, out of nowhere, a spotlight just zooms in on the group of you guys. Please introduce yourselves.
Hey, Larry, I'm Kaskrin Brightmane of the Golden Tree, and boy, am I excited to be here.
Ha ha, you love to hear it.
Hi, Larry, I'm Valeska. I'm also incredibly excited and nervous for this next 23 minutes, but we as the Golden Tree are sure to triumph.
Well, it's your big debut, of course. I mean, who wouldn't be nervous, but I assure you, you're going to have a great time.
Hi, I'm Checkers. Who are all these people and why are they looking at us?
They're your adoring fans. Gah! And again, this yelling is maybe not appropriate for the setting. This is like barbaric screams of like you're in a blood sport sounding, but like mixed with like some like, yay, woo. It's like just the setting. The like, dials aren't quite right.
Like the front row is like programmed as appropriate sporting event audience. And then like all the rest of the rows were just like filler and they found whatever audio of cheers they could.
Maybe. because that's not information your characters would know. I can't confirm or deny that, but okay, that's the vibe.
You mean everyone here knows who I am?
Not yet.
Well, they will. Well, you will. Hi, everyone. I'm Checkers, the Grung Druid.
Hello, Larry. I'm Self, and I'm still a bit confused.
Big cheer from the audience. Ah! And then the cheers kind of like die down a little bit, and there's just kind of a long, awkward pause, and the announcer, the head stops floating and kind of turns and stares at you all and just kind of gestures with its eyebrows.
Are we supposed to go down the path?
No, we have five members, guys.
So Selv, totally uncharacteristic, but this is what's going to happen. So Selv will actually move behind Mango and like prop Mango up just a little bit and just say,
"Hi, Larry, I'm Mango."
Wave his hand.
Like we get at Bernie's wave. Yeah.
Goober selves makes a return. And then again, a final like, "Mango!" Excellent. Well, we have our members of the Golden Tree. And then there's a popping sensation. You all look around at each other and you realize all of you are now wearing different outfits.
Nice.
Oh my.
Different matching. You were wearing different outfits than you were, but you were wearing exactly the same outfit as one another. And this includes Mango, by the way.
Perfect.
Yes.
Yeah. You all are outfitted in... Yeah, you know what? I'm going to make the Rixian canon choice to say that all of the next bits of clothing are canon in the world as pre-existing. You are all wearing graphic tees that are kind of a forest green and on them a big logo of a leaf that is golden. It looks passably maybe like your, you know, if you squint, it maybe kind of looks like your guild badge logo, but it's mostly, it's like, it's just a leaf, like maybe it's a maple leaf kind of thing. You are also all outfitted with cargo shorts,
nice.
Each of you, that feel very heavy, as if, I don't know, maybe it includes all of your equipment in the cargo pants, and are all wearing helmets, gloves, elbow pads, and knee pads, as well as a sensible pair of athletic shoes.
Oh, wait. I have to ask a clarifying question.
Yes.
Are they gloves or are they fingerless
gloves? Yeah, that's what I mean. Okay. They are fingerless action gloves. And all of you are just now immediately wearing these outfits and all have a name, giant name tag with whatever you said, which includes Checkers the Grung Druid.
Yeah.
And has Kaskrin, the Dwarven Warlock, spelled out in a very, like, they didn't change the font. They changed the dimensions of the name tag. So it's just this big, like, square on your chest.
You can't really see the leaf. It's just a square.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now that we've gotten our introductions out of the way and gotten to know a little bit about our teams here, let's jump right in to our first game. And again, just huge cheers to start going up. That's right, everyone. It is time for the Brains or Brawn Obstacle Course. And just people start chanting, Brains or Brawn, Brains or Brawn. And just it like goes to this very loud, just like almost shamanistic chant filling this huge arena until it abruptly is cut off along with the background music.
I feel like Val shrinks a little bit of like they are very obviously cheering for Brawn right now.
I think Kaskrin is actually flexing as like everything is happening.
Getting
like
carried away. His devotion for St. Thixius is starting to take over, yes. Mm-hmm.
I was calm when we went through the door. I am not as calm now.
Now, for those who haven't played before, the obstacle course is simple. There is a, well, an array of obstacles in the path of our various contestants. They need to compete either individually or as a team to get through them as quickly as possible. Now, of course, getting through faster is always better, but you will be graded as a team, so you are held back by your slowest member. Most of the events, of course, can be handled through brute force, through incredible feats of strength and dexterity, or through the careful recollection and application of mathematical, historical, occult, or other knowledge. And then just big, just like, knowledge!
And Self just kind of looks at Val.
Val is very clearly not making eye contact with anyone because she's like, nope, this is an obstacle course. This is bringing back like
gym class vibes.
Gym class vibes, but like presidential award day gym class vibes.
Yep.
Kaskrin is pumped. Kaskrin is like so ready because this is exactly like the guard training. I'm just like, oh yeah, obstacle course. Of course I can do this.
Yeah, totally. Now, of course, we know that these aren't just normal contestants. Some of them are magical or have interesting items to aid their way through the course. But be warned, our studio audience here doesn't just want to see success. They want to be entertained. Gah! And as this big cheer of wanting to be entertained goes out, you see underneath the floating head pops a cheero meter, basically, that is way over to the right-hand side, just quaking with enthusiasm. Any questions?
I feel like Cass is up front, like, cracking every bone.
Yeah, like, stretching his hamstrings and, like, getting ready. I'm also realizing that I have 8 dexterity. I have a -1 modifier, so, like, I'm actually going to be really bad at that.
It's all strength. All strength-based.
You can always, just barrel your way through things.
No jumping over it. Straight through.
When does the 23 minutes start?
You guys hear a loud chiming, and between each of them, you hear the voice of Larry Steves call out, well, in that case, on your mark, get set, book it. And then just chime as the crowd just like laughs, cheers, and just goes insane. And you see on the far side of your platform connecting to the dome, you see a little green light turn on and a doorway open up. And you see from all around you, you can't even really make out details. This place is so big and the other contestants are so far away. You see the other groups start to charge in immediately as the alarm goes off.
Golden Tree Adventuring Guild. We have never had a mission as important as this one.
Let's do it!
Obstacle course. Let's go, let's go!
Charge!
As the Golden Tree Guild thunders their way down this platform and are joined by all the other kind of shadowy contestants and huge peals of laughter and cheering and just kind of mob noises fill the air and kind of reverberate inside of your body. You hear just as you're about to step in to the dome. You hear Larry Steve's voice call out a final time. That is, we'll see what happens after this commercial break. And we'll also see you all next week on Reckless Attack. Bye!
Bye!
Would you, as I turn to David so that everybody knows what I'm doing here, would you, because you didn't specify which one you were taking, would you like to roll randomly, or is there one that you actually really wanted to take over the other one?
I will take plane spotting.
Okay. Interesting. Not what I thought you would take.
Because interesting. I picked randomly.
Okay.
I rolled the dice in my brain.
Which was funny because I was thinking I was going to have Selv be like, well, I always wanted to know about plane spotting and, oh, alas, the almanac.
Damn it. Well,